This is your first full term, right?
Well, it is my first full term. I was literally appointed on day one of the term starting in 2013. Even though I had a full term, I wasn't actually elected. I was appointed on day one when my predecessor was appointed to a position by Governor McCrory, and I was able to step in. So, yeah, even though it was a full term, I wasn't actually elected until this last time, and that was my first full term.
Okay, so how did you think it went? I know it was a long session, 8 months, dragged on there for, towards the end because of the budget, but how did it go?
I was pleased. I really was pleased with the way things went. You know, a lot of people criticize us for taking an extended period of time, and my philosophy from the very beginning was it was more important to get it right than it was how long we stayed there, how quickly we got out. It was important to preserve the things that we felt like were important, and it was vital that that we got things right before we left.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the argument, I guess, was that for a while the budget dragged on largely due to things that the Senate had put in, and so the House was sort of responding to measures that the Senate had placed in the budget. Is that correct?
I don't think I would characterize it quite like that. They had their own priorities, mm-hmm. and we had our own priorities. I don't think it's a secret that there were some differences there, and it's just a matter of working through those one at a time. I'm sure we'll get into some of these maybe, but driver's education, teacher assistance were things that were very important to the House, and as part of the negotiations, we wanted to make sure that those things were protected. So it was just a matter of working things out and going through the provisions and coming to something that we could all be happy with.
And were you happy with the final agreement as far as education went?
I really was. There's always in a 20-plus billion-dollar budget, there's some things that you wished you could have done different. For the most part, the fact that we preserved preserved teacher assistance for kindergarten and first grade, and the fact that we preserved driver's education is something that was very important to me, and it was something that was very important to the House. So with regard to education especially, we were able to provide a higher level of pay to early teachers. I wish we could have done more for teachers that had been in the system for a while, and all state employees that had been in the system for a while. Unfortunately, you don't always get everything that you want in a budget, and I'd like to have been able to do more there. But overall, I was pleased with where we ended up.
Do you think that coming into the short session in April, that as far as more veteran teachers, do you think there will be some areas where the Senate and the House will be able to come to agreement on providing maybe a pay boost for those veteran teachers?
I sure hope so. I hesitate to make promises because it's always so fluid, and you don't know from one day to the next where things are at sometimes. So I hesitate to make any commitments or promises, but I sure hope so. Our teachers have worked hard for us. I'm a product of the public education system, and we need to take care of them. I sure hope so.
What do you think as far as just like sort of broadly like looking at the whole session, what are some of the highlights for you, do you think, that were some of the major accomplishments of this legislature?
I was fortunate enough to serve as chairman of Appropriations for Health and Human Services. So there's some things there that I felt like were important that we needed to change, and some things we needed to preserve. For instance, grandparents had to meet eligibility requirements for the grandchildren that they were raising for daycare subsidies. We felt like if you were a grandparent raising your grandchildren, that you ought to automatically be eligible for daycare subsidies. That's something that we changed in this budget. You don't hear a lot about it, but that was one of the things I was most proud of. One bill that was important to me was House Bill 560, which deals with health care and nurses. And the way the law was written, if a healthcare professional, particularly our nurses, was assaulted in an emergency room, then the perpetrator could be convicted of a felony. If it happened outside of the emergency room, it was only a misdemeanor. So we felt like we needed to make it standardized across the board, that if you're a healthcare professional and you're assaulted on hospital grounds, then it ought to be a felony, whether it's in the emergency room or whether it's on floor five. Uh-huh. So we were able to get that through the House, get it through the Senate with strong bipartisan support, and the governor signed it. So that was one thing that I was very, very pleased with. obviously the things in the budget that we were able to take care of, we've already talked about teacher assistance, driver's education. We were able to fully fund Medicaid. Medicaid is a system that has over the years run deficits from both parties. And this year we were able to fully fund Medicaid, and I was proud of that. Medicaid reform was something that we were able to get done this time that I was also happy with. I'll be honest, in the beginning and even now, I preferred and would have preferred, without getting too much in the weeds, just a provider-led model as opposed to the hybrid model that we went to in Medicaid reform. But even though we went to a hybrid model, we had some protections in there for patients and for providers that made sure that we had strong health care going forward in Western North Carolina. And if I can add right there real quick, one of the things that I feel like my role is, one of the things that we have that's strong in Western North Carolina is strong health care. We have, in my district alone, we have three good hospitals. And I see it as my role to preserve that and protect that going forward, because I don't want the people in Newland to have to drive to Johnson City or to Asheville to get health care. And I feel like in this budget, we made important steps towards that. So that's a little bit of where I felt like we did some good things.
When you were saying you were in favor of provider-led, did you mean that you were in favor of CCNC continuing?
I am in favor of CCNC continuing, and that's part of the provider-led movement. Not exactly the same, but CCNC has played a role and saved the state millions of dollars over the year in care management. And in Medicaid reform, we had a provision that said until Medicaid reform is approved by the feds, implemented, CCNC would have a role to play. And then we put a provision in there that said, even after that, we need to find a way to make sure that CCNC, Community Care of North Carolina, has a role to play here in this state because of the positive things that they've done, particularly in Western North Carolina, which, as you know, is important to me.
Yeah. Why? And this sort of goes to the whole philosophy of Medicaid reform, but why change a system when CCNC was doing a good job?
I think it's a broader than CCNC. I was pleased that CCNC has a path forward, and we're not just disbanding that contract. So CCNC will have a role to play going forward, at least for the next 4 to 6 years and hopefully thereafter. I agree with you that we already have a strong Medicaid system, but going forward with Medicaid reform gives us budget predictability. It puts us on a path to where we know how much that we're going to be required to spend on Medicaid. And you're talking about almost $4 billion in a $20 billion budget, over $20 billion budget. We have to have that fiscal sustainability, and we have to have that budget predictability. So that's why we needed to move in that direction. And to be honest with you, there wasn't much debate on whether Medicaid reform should happen. Now, there was plenty of debate on how it should happen, but everyone believed that we needed to move in a new direction with regard to Medicaid reform.
What about Medicaid expansion? I know it's sort of a toxic idea for this legislature. Does this sort of put us on a path to starting to consider expansion of Medicaid?
That's a great question, and I wished I had an answer for you. I don't know how CMS, which is the feds, is going to react to our Medicaid reform package. They would have to approve it, and how Medicaid expansion plays into that. They may. I don't want to speculate. I don't know what role that'll play.
Would you hope to see Medicaid expanded?
You know, I'll be honest, I'm not there yet. I understand that we've got a problem, and particularly in rural areas like mine, rural access, and there are people that are still struggling. I think a misnomer is that it's free to the state government. And at this point, it's not. The state government would be required to pay 10% of the Medicaid cost, in addition to the $4 billion, $3.7 billion that we're already paying. I understand the frustration. I understand the problem, and I want to look to move forward in a positive direction. But I'm just not there yet.
What are the people who aren't insured? What are their options right now?
Well, I mean, you still have the exchange, which is eligible to you. And I'm not as familiar with ACA as I probably need to be going forward with regard to how the feds operate that. But that would be an option for them. You can always go out on the private market as well. And still a lot of employers are having that coverage. But I concede the argument. No question, there's still some that are struggling with providing health insurance.
What did you think about the changes to taxes that went through in the budget? Income tax fell a little bit. So did the corporate income tax. Sales taxes were expanded. But I know that one of the provisions, and this was sort of a debate between the House and the Senate for a while, was this helping out of rural areas. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that your counties would stand to benefit from this change. So what did you think of that provision?
Actually, in the beginning, the initial proposal, two of my counties would benefit, McDowell and Mitchell, but Avery would lose considerably because it's a tourism, more tourism geared. So they would have lost under that specific provision. The final provision that was in the budget stated that some counties may have a net zero, but nobody would lose. Some would gain, but none would lose. And obviously McDowell and Mitchell would fare pretty well under that system, and Avery would remain neutral. Uh-huh. And I'm all about the interest of Western North Carolina and the people that I represent. And under that set of circumstances, I had no problem supporting it. If Avery would have lost, that would have been enough for me to have considered not supporting the final budget.
Although true, right, in some areas where people will be paying more expanded sales taxes but not receiving the benefits. It's a question of who's paying these taxes, right? So like somebody in Asheville, for instance, would pay a sales tax, but none of those extra sales taxes will go into Buncombe County.
Yeah, and I think I actually saw an article this morning I was reading about that. And that may, again, I don't know as much about those counties that I don't represent, but that very well may be a problem that we need to look at going forward, because I see what you're saying as far as they're paying the taxes of the new taxes, but they're not reaping any of the benefits of the new tax system. So I understand that, and that may be something we need to look at. All I can tell you is I do know that McDowell, Avery, and Mitchell are held harmless and are not, that they won't lose revenue to those counties and those cities going forward.
What did you think of the bond measure that was finally agreed upon in its final form?
I was proud of the bond package. Representative Dean Arp worked hard on that, and I think you need to make, I'm a fiscal conservative, but you need to make smart investments in our future. And I think that we did that with this bond package and upgrading facilities. Our community college is the anchor, as you probably well know, of economic development, particularly in Western North Carolina. So our community colleges, we made a strong investment there, a strong investment in our state parks and things like that. I would like to have seen some of those funds go to transportation. That's something that I would like to have seen more of. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But overall, I thought that that it was smart investments on our part in the state to invest in our infrastructure. That is a role of government to invest in our infrastructure. And I think the bond package done that in a fiscally sustainable and a fiscally conservative way. So I was proud to support the bond initiative.
And now something did happen with education, right, where they basically made sure that all the highway is, I don't have it in front of me, but the highway trust fund, I think all of the money will go to roads. Is that right? I could be wrong about
that. And that was the argument that the funds would still be there to invest in our highways and our roads and infrastructure, currently as it is on a pay-as-you-go system outside of the bonds, which is a good thing. Uh-huh. But any time that we can invest in infrastructure in our roads and bridges, I would like to have seen even more going into that. But yeah, you're correct that my understanding is we would still continue on a pay-as-you-go for our roads and highways.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of environmental initiatives that happened during this session? One thing that happened was the renewable energy tax credits were allowed to expire at the end of this year. Were you in favor of that?
I try to always be as honest as I can on these things, and that's not really one that I guess I'm lukewarm. I'm not passionate about that as I am about healthcare or education. It wouldn't have been a deal breaker either way for me in the budget. They expired, so I was fine with them as the law was written. If they would have been renewed, I probably it wouldn't have been a deal breaker in the budget for me on that either.
Right.
It is what it is, I guess.
So what are those issues that education, obviously, and being on the health committee, obviously, is a big one. What are those issues that kind of fire you up when you go to work in Raleigh?
We talked about tax reform earlier.
Yeah.
Sales tax in particular, and something called the sales tax reimbursement, which is different than sales tax redistribution. Sales tax reimbursement, our not-for-profits basically get a reimbursement for the sales tax that they pay on the different things that they purchase throughout the year. And that doesn't just affect hospitals, although I've already told you that that's a commitment of mine to make sure that we have hospitals in all across Western North Carolina. But that sales tax reimbursement affects private colleges. Lees McRae's in my district. Warren Wilson would be affected by that. Mm-hmm. Montreat would be affected by that. And also YMCA's, who is, as you know, vital to Western North Carolina as well. Had that sales tax reimbursement went away, as some proposed, it would affect all of those areas. And those are some of the things that we're doing well in Western North Carolina. And I want to make sure that we preserve and protect that. And in this budget, we were able to protect that mm-hmm. sales tax reimbursement. So that's one thing. Healthcare in general, protecting our physicians, protecting our nurses, and protecting our hospitals. CON is a complicated issue. It talks about certificate of need. There was a lot of debate this time about that. And without getting too much in the weeds, it's not just a free market argument. I'm as free market as anybody. Mm-hmm. But when our hospitals have to provide charity care, anybody that comes in the door, they have to provide care. They have to be open 24 hours per day. Mm-hmm. So you're not really dealing in a free market. So making sure that CON laws were protected and making sure the sales tax reimbursement were two things that were very important to me that we were able to preserve this session.
What do you hear from constituents when you're in Raleigh? I'm sure you kind of get inundated as a lawmaker with a lot of different issues. But what are some of the things that that you heard a lot from that people were telling you during this session?
Driver's education and teachers' assistance were two of the biggest that I probably got the most calls and concerns about, mm-hmm. Wanting to know the outcome. My superintendents were obviously concerned about both. Mm-hmm. A lot of my teachers, state employees, were concerned this time about what type of compensation they were going to get. So I had a lot of calls from state employees. A lot were concerned with Medicaid reform and making sure that we did that in a fiscally responsible way, particularly those that were in the healthcare industry, not just fiscally responsible, but just smart policy-wise. So those would be some issues that come to the top of my list.
Okay. Let's see. Looking at some of the things that happened in the last hour, some things didn't happen. For instance, charter schools, there was going to be a proposal to sort of take some of the money from traditional public schools and shift them over to charter schools. And that, it didn't necessarily die, but I guess it could still be resurrected in the short session. But how did you stand on that?
Had I voted on the bill, I've been unapologetic, I would have voted against it. Mm-hmm. And just if I can take a second to talk in more broad terms, just like healthcare is something that we're doing well in Western North Carolina, traditional public education is something. We have great private schools, and I think there's some charter schools in Buncombe County and other parts of Western North Carolina that are also doing some great work. Mm-hmm. But traditional public education is where my passion is, and anything that would take funds away from them to redistribute to anybody would be something that would be problematic for me, that I would on the surface opposed without seeing the details of the bill. So I was glad to see that bill not come to the floor this time.
What about the voucher system for private schools? Were you okay with how that was implemented or the idea of it?
I was okay with how it was implemented. I do oppose vouchers. I've opposed vouchers from the beginning, but they are in North Carolina now. The opportunity mm-hmm. scholarships are here, and they're going to be here to stay. So really, I think the conversation has shifted from whether you're for them or against them, how do we move forward in a positive way to where everyone benefits?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'll be working on next session, to make sure that Those private schools still have that autonomy, still have flexibility that they so desire. But yeah, in the beginning, I guess I'm unapologetically biased towards traditional public schools.
What about the proposal that did die, that came to in the last day? This was the one that would have sort of preempted local control of issues such as affordable housing, fair wages, or living wages, I'm sorry, and discrimination measures, anti-LGBT discrimination measures, and that sort of thing. I know that died in the House, but I confess I didn't look at how you voted. Were you opposed to that? Were you in favor of it?
On the surface, I would have supported it. I would like to dive into the bill a little more. Again, that was one of those last hour things.
Yeah.
But it basically on the surface, with regard to, I would have supported it.
I know that you're a fairly new legislator, but we're talking about all this kind of last minute stuff. Like the budget gets pushed a couple of months down the road, and as you mentioned, that creates problems for school districts who kind of go in uncertain. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're kind of used to it at this point. They know it kind of does happen every time. Mm-hmm. It's obviously just kind of a fact of lawmaking. But is there any way to sort of change that from happening?
Two things. I think you have to separate the issues. On the last minute laws, mm-hmm. I think that we do need to be very careful in passing last minute bills that have now been through a committee and not vetted. And to Speaker Moore's credit, we pretty much did that. Now, anytime mm-hmm. you have the last of the session, things are going to happen. But Speaker Moore had done a great job this time. It was definitely a bottom-up system. I couldn't be prouder of the Speaker of the House. So I think that you always got to be careful about those last-minute bills. Mm-hmm. On the budget, I take a slightly different view. Yes, it is a little bit problematic for those school boards and those superintendents on how they're going to budget going forward. But it would be more problematic if we get it wrong. So I would rather stay there a little longer and have a little bit of uncertainty to make sure that teacher assistants are protected, make sure driver's education is protected, and make sure our teachers are paid what they deserve.
How come the legislature, and you probably don't have the answer to this, but how come the legislature doesn't just start that process sooner? I know it begins with the governor and then the House, or at least this time the House and then the Senate. Why does it always happen last month or so?
Well, as you said, because the process takes so long with the governor's recommendation, which takes some time for him to develop based on numbers. The first thing, we have to know how much we're able to spend mm-hmm. before we can move forward. So we have to wait on those revenue numbers to come in. The governor then makes his proposal. The House then has to go through their committees, work through the system, do amendments. Everyone has input of 120-member chamber. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the Senate gets their turn at it, which sometimes, as this time, it's no secret, was significantly different than the House proposal. Mm-hmm. And then you have to come together to try to work out those differences. So I would say that we do start early, but when you're dealing with 170 legislators and an executive branch and a $20 plus billion budget, it's going to take some time to get it right.
Right.
So I don't know that, unless you have a full-time legislature, based on the circumstances that we have, I don't know that it can be a better process than it is.
I'm sure you'd prefer not to be full-time legislating.
I do like being at home with my wife and daughter at night. So yeah, I'm happy with the part-time.
And the House has a rule that I think most people would be in favor of, is that 72-hour rule of when the budget is out there, the public and lawmakers have 72 hours to read it before voting on it, or are required to have that 72 hours. The
sure.
Senate doesn't seem to have, well, it doesn't have that.
Yeah, I think that was a good change that we made. I think that was actually made under Speaker Tillis, who made some great changes to the way the system was.
Well, speaking of Tillis, you mentioned being really proud of the way that Tim Moore has ran the House. Mm-hmm. Is there a marked difference between Tillis and Moore in terms of style, approach, anything like that?
Anytime you have a different personality, you're going to have a different type of speakership. Both of them did a great job, and I admire both of those men and was proud to serve under both of them.
Uh-huh.
I felt like this time more because I had, I guess, more seniority under Speaker Moore as chairman of the Appropriations Committee and not a freshman in my first term. Just by default, you're not going to have as big a role to play. Mm-hmm. But this time, as chairman of Appropriations, I felt like I was able to have more input than I was before. And that was just a nature of being here longer. So,
right.
So I was proud to serve under both speakers and still consider both men true friends.
How did you come down on that last minute bill dealing with abortion, or really dealing with the sale of fetal tissue? That was one of those that passed in the last couple of days.
Well, a couple things on that, and a bill that I forgot to mention was the bill that the governor vetoed that protected religious liberties for our magistrates and for our register of deeds, or for the deputy register of deeds. On social issues, I'm unapologetically conservative. Mm-hmm. And anything like that that comes up that protects life, that protects religious liberty, I'm going to support. Actually, ironically, on that bill, I teach part-time on Monday, so I wasn't able to be down there to vote on that last bill,
on
the fetal tissue bill. Uh-huh. But had I been there, I would have been proud to support that bill.
I know there were some concerns with that bill as far as the unintended consequences of research, like biomedical research, say at RTP, and as far as stem cell research, the stuff that's going on, Duke, UNC, NC State, mm-hmm. Are there any restrictions added on to that type of research? I know that the bill was largely aimed at Planned Parenthood as a response mm-hmm. to those videos. Mm-hmm.
That's a great question, and I to be honest with you, I'm really not sure. I would mm-hmm. just say that any bill that expands the protections of life is something that I'm going to support.
Uh-huh. As far as the magistrate's bill, why are you proud of that bill? Like, what do you think that the state gains by that?
I think religious liberty is part of our Constitution. I think it's part of the state Constitution as well. And we have to protect that, and to allow magistrates to opt out if they no longer want to perform marriages, not just a type of marriage, but any marriage is the way the law was written, because of their religious liberty, they ought to be able to do so. And there was provisions in place. We actually had an issue in McDowell County where magistrates from Rutherford County had to drive up to uh-huh. McDowell, and McDowell magistrates had to drive to Rutherford because all of the magistrates in McDowell County actually opted out of performing marriages. And there was a small cost involved. And as I told the reporter from WLOS, that to protect religious liberty, which is the cornerstone of our state and our country, that small $2,000 investment was well worth it.
Do you think that what happened in Kentucky with Kim Davis would have happened here had that bill not been in place?
Possibly. I'm not sure. What I'm most proud of, other than the religious protections, religious liberty protections, is the fact that we had provisions in there, had mechanisms to where we still were in the letter of the law of what the Supreme Court decided. So it's not like we're not allowing any couple to be married, but uh-huh. we tailored the law to where that was protected, but also protected religious liberty. So I'm not sure what Kentucky did, uh-huh. but the way that we tailored the law, a lot of thought was put into it to alleviate some of those concerns.
Right. Wasn't that sort of, though, I mean, isn't that sort of just like what had to happen? I mean, obviously you can't usurp the Supreme Court mm-hmm. entirely.
That's right.
So why should someone that's tasked in their profession to issue marriage licenses with regards to the law, why should they be able to not do their job, essentially, when they have the option of basically resigning and choosing a different profession?
Great question. A couple of things on that. One, when they took the job, the law was different. When they accepted that position, that was something that they did not have to deal with. Uh-huh. So now, because of the Supreme Court decision, North Carolina was faced with this problem of these magistrates and assistant register of deeds who took the position under the premise that this was not something that they would have to address.
Right.
So that was part of the concern for me, because, you know, you might could make an argument for magistrates going forward to say, you know what's going to happen. You know the marriages that you're going to have to perform. But those that are already in place, that was not a provision for them to have the, that job.
Right,
so that
right,
was
right.
part of my issue with it. And the second one is, I understand that we can't usurp the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is the law of the land. So we have to abide by that, despite what the North Carolina Constitution says. The Supreme Court is the law of the land, and we have to abide by that. At the same time, if we can protect religious liberties and at the same time abiding by the Supreme Court, I think we need to try to do that.
Staying with social issues, the 72-hour wait period for abortions that took effect, I think, October 1st. Mm-hmm. I assume you were in favor of that as well.
I was.
And why?
Again, and I know this is a painful, and it brings out passions on both sides, mm-hmm. and I totally get that. But I'm pro-life, and mm-hmm. anything that comes before the legislature as a pro-life measure that would allow a family, a woman, to think longer about the decision that she's getting mm-hmm. ready to make, I think is something that this monumental decision that's
right.
going to have that potentially is going to be made. I don't think it's unreasonable to require some time to think about that type of decision. And
uh-huh.
then if you want to go forward, the law is what it is. But I had no problem supporting the 72-hour rule.
I mean, so essentially, like, if the North Carolina legislature brought up a bill outlawing abortion, which obviously because they couldn't do it because of Roe mm-hmm. v. Wade, but if they could, you would vote for that?
I think you set it up right. Roe versus Wade, that's the Supreme Court's the law of the land.
Right,
so
right.
constitutionally, North Carolina can't do that.
Right.
But if you're asking a hypothetical,
if it could
happen,
right.
then I would support that.
Right,
yes.
Okay. So I know that recently there was a letter sent, and we're sort of expanding to national.
Sure.
A letter that was sent in support of Mark Meadows mm-hmm. In the wake of John Boehner's resignation that, if I'm correct, you signed also. So why the support for Mark Meadows? And did you think that John Boehner was not doing a good job as Speaker of the House?
Okay. I like John Boehner. I like Speaker Boehner. And I think it's a difficult position to be in as Speaker of the House in the United States, particularly in a Republican caucus that is independent, rightfully so independent.
Mm-hmm.
So I would not say that he was not doing a good job. What I'd like to talk about, since you asked the question, is my respect and high regard for Congressman Meadows. If
mm-hmm.
if I can, I'll tell a quick story. He was speaking one time. And he was talking about pressure from D.C. being put on him maybe to vote a certain way. And they would say, I need you to be part of the team on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say, guys, I appreciate what you're saying, but my team's back in Western North Carolina, and I'm going to do what's right by them. And that was one of the first times that I ever heard him speak. And I said, that's the kind of representative that I'd like to be. And I believe in his heart that he thinks that he's doing what's right for the people of Western North Carolina. And as long as he does that, I'm going to be a foot soldier for him.
And he was, he did briefly was sort of reprimanded in a way that he was taken. I think he was a chair of some committee
or something.
Oversight
committee, yeah.
Yeah, but there was, I guess, enough backlash that he was reinstated
mm-hmm.
To that, I guess, which shows the passion of the real conservatives in the House, I guess.
I think so, and yeah. The passion around the country, if you will, that came in for someone who was doing what they thought was right. I think we've lost that, just speaking in broad terms, that it's more about party, or it's more about who's got the influence in D.C. or in Raleigh, and it's become less about the people that you represent.
Uh-huh.
And Congressman Meadows, he's got that. Whatever it is, he's got that, and he understands that he's representing the people of Western North Carolina. And I think that's, I think you saw it, to your point, I think you saw that in how that he was removed and then quickly put back to that position.
What is it like being a state lawmaker, especially as a new lawmaker? Are sort of the veterans helpful? Do they kind of take you under their wing, or I mean, what are the personal relationships like there at the Capitol?
Great question. I have met some great friends since I've been down there. Some that have been there a while, and then some that came in my freshman class in 2013. I think there were 34 of us. Almost half the caucus was new. Mm-hmm. So we were bonded together. So we have met some great friends. I've met some great friends and people that I talk to on a weekly basis. And it's some friendships, I'll be candid, is just based on political realities.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some true, genuine friendships down there on both sides of the aisle.
Right.
And that's something that I think gets lost sometimes in the debate. But it has been a phenomenal experience. To North Carolina's a big state, a broad state, diverse state. And to have people from across this state come together and to learn about where I'm, for them to learn about where I come from, and for me to learn about where they come from, and just build those relationships has been something, regardless of how long I stay, is something that I won't take for granted. So it's been a great experience.
Yeah, when just looking at putting out invitations to lawmakers, I didn't plan to make it even Republican, Democrat, but just the way it worked out, the invitations went out, it was 5 Democrats and 5 Republicans.
Oh, wow.
So I guess that we have a very split delegation here in Western North Carolina. Do you have good relationships with the Democrats and Western Democrats in particular, or do you speak with them much?
I do, actually. Mm-hmm. I've got we are all down there with the purpose of representing Western North Carolina. As cliche as that sounds, that's what we're doing down there. And all the Western legislators, Representative McGrady from Hendersonville, Representative Whitmire from Hendersonville, Representative Turner, a Democrat from Western Buncombe County, and Representative Fisher, who represents Asheville, which is, you know, two totally different districts from where I represent and what she represents. She's one of my friends down there.
Mm-hmm.
And although we differ vigorously on issues on a personal level, I consider her a friend, and Representative Brian Turner a friend as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have good relationships with legislators on both sides of the aisle, because in the end, we're all trying to work to make Western North Carolina and this state better.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, when, you know, and I apologize because you just got done, but looking ahead to April, are there any things that you personally are going to try to push for? Are there any initiatives that you didn't get around to this time?
Just in broad terms, I want to continue to preserve certificate of need laws, and I want to make sure the tax, as we move forward with tax reform, that we do not lose that tax reimbursement to our nonprofits, because I think they're essential to economic development and the general well-being of Western North Carolina. So my role is to continue to protect and preserve that. Our providers in North Carolina, our healthcare providers, whether it be long-term care facilities, our hospitals, our physicians that take Medicaid patients, have taken hits because of the recession of 2008. So depending on what the numbers look like, again, I hesitate to make any promises, but I would like to at some point increase those reimbursement rates for Medicaid. Now, Medicaid reform will play into that, and I don't know how it's all going to shake out, but at some point we're going to have to do something to increase rates for these providers that have taken a hit because of the 2008 recession. So that's what I'd like to look at going forward.
Okay, well, great. Well, we've talked for 38 minutes now. Is there anything we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about? Any issues that we didn't cover?
I don't think so. Just that it's a humbling experience, again, as cliche as it sounds, to be able to walk into that legislative building and represent Western North Carolina and represent our values and try to make our little part of the state better is something that I don't take for granted and that I'm humbled to get to do every day.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed it.